The Guardian.
The Guardian Football Weekly Extra Podcast with James Richardson. Coming up,
heading for success like John Arnoriza, it's Football Weekly Extra. On today's edition, those Champions League semis. Chelsea robbed the cup, while in Barcelona, Ronaldo has more spot problems. Mind you, he is famous for going abroad and having misses. We review the action and look forward to the big Chelsea United clash this weekend. Elsewhere, top Norwich fan Paul McInnes, you know, off Music Weekly, heads our championship coverage. On the line from Madrid, there's the low rider, there's more top posts, and if you want wafer with that, there's an especially built-in obsolescence preview of Rangers Fiorentina. All that in Football Weekly Extra.
Guardian Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson.
Welcome on board, Matt Scott.
Hi.
Hi, dressed down Thursday for you, Matt, today.
It is, yeah. Well, I haven't got any mint lunches to go to today.
So. Oh, all right, nice one. Nor have you got any notes. You're just going to freewheel it, freestyle.
Well, unfortunately, that's all I ever do.
Right, good for you, Matt. Welcome back on board, and welcome to you, rival pod captain, Paul McInnes. You were marooned in space, we picked you up.
Hi, James. It's very nice to be here.
Well, it's lovely to have you on board, bringing a touch of professionalism and quality.
And I've got a shirt on.
Right. As does Barry.
And you do look like one of your country and western music-loving fans.
It's all the rage right now, mate. It is the look.
Right, shirts. They get our vote. Barry, I see you're a shirt fan as well.
I'm wearing a shirt, yes.
Okay, good. And how's the week been for you?
Been fine.
Hellish morning, though. Hellish. I mean, the listeners should know we've had a hellish morning. To bring this show to them, it hasn't been easy, has it?
Yeah, I crawled across 15 miles of broken glass to be here.
Right.
And there were assorted commuting problems in London.
And the commuting.
Computing. Which was not an okay computer you were working on.
No, it wasn't, was it?
Our top music weekly presenter, Paul McInnes. He'll get that reference, even though you didn't.
Right. I'm going to move on to the football then. The Champions League, Liverpool-Chelsea, first off. Hey, I know this was a couple of days ago, but the injustice of it,
The injustice of us all being subjected to it, having to watch it.
I tell you, the last 5 minutes, how dramatic was that? I love the post from, who was this, Marchway in Sydney, Australia. Imagine if someone had told Risa before the game that he would score a last-second equaliser with a diving header in front of the goal.
The thing is, he went in for that header at kickoff, didn't he? And he was still going for it after the 89th minute.
He had
so long to pull out of that header and just kick it clear. What on earth was he playing?
It's a sad tale, I think, John Arnoriza. If you think about him last year, Nick Camp Nou scoring that cracking half-volley off of Craig Bellamy to help knock out the Azulgrana. And this season, but ever since then, it's been a decline. He's obviously lost his confidence. And you could just see the thought processes going through as the cross came over. I'm not going to hit this with my right foot because I'll slice it into the net. I'm not going to take that risk. And if he was a regular first-team player, he would do that, no question, and it would have been safe. But the doubts are there. He doesn't have the self-belief. The fans have turned him in and low diving header into his own net.
Well, work here is done.
Is it not an absolute disgrace that a professional footballer who is paid as much as he is, and we all know to the penny how much he's paid,
absolutely,
since he lost his pay slip somewhere a few months ago, is unable to kick with his right foot?
Completely. But when you're talking about a loss of confidence, the man does set his targets very high, doesn't he? The number of supermodels that he's chased unrequited, and that is bound to affect a man's confidence.
Is that so?
Oh, he's certainly been... I mean, because this is another thing about John Arnoriza's private life in which we are all very well versed.
Peter Crouch and Abigail Clancy and you think, well, if that man can do it, why can't I?
Absolutely.
Is it my forehead?
Yeah, could be.
My forehead to good effect.
He sent pictures of his waxed upper torso, I believe, to a supermodel, and she gave him short shrift.
Right.
I can't remember what her name was because, was interesting enough merely to know what she did for a living.
I think the important element is his waxed upper torso, not necessarily the recipient. Boy, I can't imagine what else there might be to say about Liverpool-Chelsea. So should we just move on?
Very quickly, I think it was the best of the five semi-final matches so far between those two.
Oh, I see.
Right. I was going to say.
Well, that's the best of a very bad bunch.
Yes.
I mean, the two semi-finals that were on over this week, if they are the best four teams Europe have to offer, then God help us all. That's all I can say.
It's turning into the Premiership, really, where everybody goes in not to get beaten. I mean, I think that's, you know, I mean, actually, there has been some excitement in Champions League this season, but this time I've got to say I disagree with what you're saying about the best of the five, because I was up there for the Chelsea
for the real journalists.
Well, yeah. Well, no. I mean, it was. I was up there for that, and don't tell me what OK Computer means. But I was up there for their most recent one at Anfield, and it was at for the penalty shootout one, and the tension of that game just made it something very, very special. It was completely different.
So, as an occasion for people who were there, it was great. But as a match, it probably wasn't.
Well, probably not. But then I was sort of caught up in the excitement.
Caught up in the hoopla, probably. Yep. That's another music reference.
Oh, I see. Hoopla. What is that kind of a 1950s musical genre?
I don't know. He's wearing the shirt for it.
He most certainly is.
I bet some lucky pod listener out there is going to know the song that Caught Up in the Hoopla comes from.
I love all this clothes banter, you know, fashion banter. It's like we're in a Premier League dressing room or something, you know, getting kitted out for training.
I think we'd probably
mocking each other's taste in clothes.
Well, indeed, you know,
happy slapping and waxed up torso.
Indeed, yeah, it is, mate, because on top of your shirt, you do have a Kappa tracksuit. So it is just like just like a Premier League dressing room. Brilliant.
I'd like to add here that I do not have a Kappa tracksuit.
But you wish you did.
Yeah. Now, the other game, as indeed it's known. Just
before we go to the other game, I think it is worth saying that.
How did you get a cup of tea?
Because I made it, James.
All right, and the reason you didn't invite anybody else to partake
because
in your beverage
because you were saying, where's Matt? Where's Matt? So.
Right, okay, Barry, back to you.
Well, what I have to say pales into insignificance alongside this now beverage banter.
Right, it's beverage gate. All right. Yeah, in journalistic speak.
I just think Liverpool were by far the better team on Tuesday.
Right.
And Chelsea would probably have considered themselves very lucky to have escaped with a 1-0 defeat.
Yeah.
So they will be absolutely beside themselves that they got a draw.
Can we go back to psychology again?
Right.
Because, you know, like you look at Chelsea playing, they are not the team of Mourinho. They are not that confident in what they do anymore. It was only like 10-15 minute patch in the middle of the second half when they actually started playing the ball half decently. Will this result, which was very lucky, be enough to galvanise them into giving the rigorous team display they need next week to close out a clean sheet?
Show of hands, who thinks that it will? Oh, really? Oh, you guys
think that? But that's principally because...
Barry and Matt.
Shows of hands aren't really very effective. In medium,
I quite like
that.
They have a certain whimsy to them.
But their manager is capable of basting things in formaldehyde because that's right. What he does as a
second job.
Part of his dreaming regime.
That's exactly what he's going to do. I can't see Liverpool rising from the dead on that one.
If Chelsea do win the Champions League, they won't have a parade on an open-top bus. It'll be a carriage drawn by horses with plumes on their foreheads. With him in a top hat.
Actually, I'm afraid that only happens in round my way in southeast London, and genuinely, it still does.
Oh no, there's an Undertaker's around the corner from my place in Brixton, and I regularly
Surely
see the horse-drawn carriages.
Brighton, Barry?
No, it's not Brighton, it's Brixton.
Oh, okay.
Almost. I live in Brixton, apparently, according to one of our pod listeners, so that people can't accuse me of being a bigot.
That's
why I moved there.
Come on. Remember the counselling.
Oh, yeah.
Right, okay. Leave the bitterness. Walk away.
I'm walking away. All I'm right, not bitter.
Then. All right, then. Step one on his 10-point programme there. I'm not bitter. Just keep repeating that. Now, but it's a good point to raise. Is this going to set them through? Are Chelsea going to go through now after a game that Liverpool...
Well, I think you've got to bow to Matt Scott on this.
Yeah,
I think
right, Matt bowing now, about. Sir. All right, well, listen, the other game then, Man United. They didn't score the away goal, but Barcelona didn't score. They've got 0-0. Is glass half full or half empty?
I think, personally, that Barcelona are marginal favourites after that result. But they really do need to improve themselves because I think if you score now and you're very careful at the back, and there wasn't a great deal of evidence that they are capable of that last night, but if they do score, then I think that it's going to be very difficult mentally for Manchester United. I can't see them running away with, you know, a 3 or 4 goal advantage in the second leg. I mean, the fact is, Barcelona got behind Manchester United on numerous occasions, and it was just the final ball that let them down.
It's quite an important thing, though, the final ball.
But yeah, but, you know, I mean, I can see that there's... It's all marginal because, you know, I mean, I think the occasion got to them a little bit. And
to United?
No, to Barcelona,
really?
A little bit, yeah, because so much is hanging on this season and these games for them. And, there, you know, I think if they can just get those, and it is just such marginal, you know, minute little adjustments, if they can get that right, I think if Vidic is still out for the next game, then they've got difficulty.
And Puyol's back, isn't he? Do you think
Milito was appalling.
Yeah, he was. Do you think they'll play Henry from the start next week? Because I thought the interesting thing about Barcelona's their failure to get that final ball in was that kind of forward, the tridente, as I'm sure Dr. Sid would call it, didn't quite function because Iniesta was kind of dragging a bit central and a bit deep. And that if you put Iniesta back in that middle three and put Terry out on the left.
That's right, yeah. But, I mean, he's had a very poor season himself. It may be that on the return to English soil, he will have a massive point.
How about
he's
page
done well
Dr. Sid and get his views on that specific Tridente issue? Hello, Sid.
Hello, James. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. You join us with an interesting lineup here in the pod. We've got Matt Scott.
Hello, mate.
Hello.
And then Paul McKinney's in Off Football Weekly.
Music Weekly, James. You keep doing this. Hello, Sid. Long time no speak.
How are you?
Very well, thank you, mate.
There aren't issues, are there?
No, we did fall out over a woman, but, right. You know, that was resolved.
Yeah. Crikey. Barry Glendinning.
Hi, Sid.
Hey, Barry.
Hi. Sid, you were translating for Fergie last night.
Dive right in there, Barry. Dive right in there, yeah.
Is there a huge temptation on your part to, like, put words in his mouth and tell the Spanish press that he said things he hasn't said at all? Like, you know, I saw aliens in my hotel room.
It would be extremely harsh of me to admit to that, but there was a huge temptation to put words in his mouth and probably put a fork in his thigh as well.
Why? Why, Sid?
But anyway, no, it didn't happen. No, it was all a bit bizarre.
So I missed this. You were sat next to the great man, yeah? And then you had Sir Alex Ferguson on the other side, probably. And then basically he would say something and then you would translate it. That's how it works, yeah?
That's what translators do, James.
I'm up to speed.
Someone says something and you put it in a different language. Although, bizarrely enough, the official translator that UEFA were using mostly got that wrong. A couple of times he was asked questions in Spanish.
Yes.
The answer was given in Spanish and then he proceeded to translate into Spanish. And this guy was dreadful, the official translator UEFA had. And then for whatever reason, I don't know why it was, after last night's game, Ferguson came out with a Manchester United press officer and the translator that had been hired, I don't know if by Barcelona or by UEFA, just wasn't there.
Is that where you got... Have you been tapped up for this before? Or were you just...
No. I was sitting in the press conference waiting to listen to Ferguson talk. We were kind of sitting there and Ferguson was there with the press officer and I hadn't quite clicked that there were only two of them up there. And then I heard a couple of people say, Sid, you go and do it. What?
Is there a doctor in the house?
Is there a doctor in the house who speaks a bit of Spanish? And basically it was that they were sitting there twiddling their thumbs, not knowing what to do, and a couple of people who know me essentially sort of told them, well, you go up and do it. So I went up and did it, unofficially, because Barca's press officer wasn't there. There was no one from UEFA there.
And that went well, did it?
It went reasonably well. I thought, actually, surprisingly enough, I thought Ferguson was really quite interesting. He was, I mean, particularly compared to Rijkaard, who normally doesn't say anything. Ferguson was quite analytical in his answers. He was quite honest as well about a couple of things. I mean, he admitted that perhaps playing Park and Rooney where he played them was counterproductive in the end and forced them to be more defensive than he would have liked. It was actually quite an interesting experience.
Was this because of the way that you phrased the question so intelligently, so
analytically?
Well,
that's what it'll be. I made him sound ever so eloquent. No, it was because I think actually if you get Ferguson on, or this is certainly my impression from last night, and I don't know him well enough to say this for sure, but I got the impression that if you get Ferguson on purely footballing issues, he actually does engage with
was he
with
masticating at the time?
Was he doing what, sorry?
Masticating.
Oh, that was a C. I'm glad. No, he wasn't. No.
So it's just something he does at the touchline. I thought he was a frenzy.
Well, that's most unpleasant.
Yeah, I thought he was a frenzy chewing.
See, if I'd been in your position, I'd have sort of gone, hola, señor Fergie, and then asked him, said in Spanish, I don't know the Spanish for this question, but just, you know, did you think your tactics were a bit gutless? He's probably happy with the 0-0 result, but his tactics were strange last night.
In a way, that's what the Spanish were arguing as well. Well, not arguing, but asking as well. In the, you know, they bigged this as a game between two sides that play out and out football, and it was going to be good news for Barcelona, and certainly this is what a couple of Barca players were saying in the build-up to the game. It's good news for Barcelona because they were playing against a side that plays football and allows you to play football. And actually, as it turns out, Ferguson did what Ferguson, generally speaking, tends to do in Europe, which is to be a little bit more conservative or a little bit more astute, depending on how you want to look at it. Although, as you say, last night, maybe you could accuse him of being a bit more cowardly. But as I say, he was prepared to answer that question. He didn't kind of bat it out. He didn't have a go at anyone for accusing him of being defensive. He admitted that perhaps he'd turned a little bit too far towards caution and admitted that it didn't really work. But then, as he said, by the same token, they defended pretty well and they've got really quite a good result now.
I think also, to be slightly cynical, I think that he's aware of how newspapers work, and by going into that much detail about that particular issue, it did deflect any particular attention from Cristiano Ronaldo's penalty miss, which was always, I mean, he was extremely approving of of Cristiano Ronaldo's general performance to the extent that he said that, that it was the rest of the team's fault that, Ronaldo didn't get the support that he required. And that, I think, is evidence of his media savvy, to be honest.
Well, and the
I think as well there's something else that and this is one of the things, obviously, when you translate, of course, your job is to put his words back out, whether you agree with him or not. And when he said, well, we're a bit defensive, but in Cristiano Ronaldo, I thought we had someone who could win us the game on his own and was brilliant tonight and really was a threat for Barcelona and stuff. And I was saying this thinking, well, yeah, OK, whatever you say, mate.
He was United's most dangerous player. Rooney, by contrast, an absolute shocker.
Yeah, I felt for Rooney a little bit, though, because he partly had a shocker because he was forced to play in this kind of bizarre sort of right-sided defensive role that didn't really suit him, and he worked very hard.
Did he explain why he put Ronaldo through the middle and Rooney out on the wing rather than the other way around?
What he said was that he used both Rooney and Park to have a defensive role because they're effectively hinted rather than said this directly because they're disciplined. And he said, and I felt that by putting Cristiano Ronaldo up front, we always had the option of a decent break, and we had someone who on his own could win us the game. In other words, I think what he was saying was we came here to defend with one guy who we hoped could nick us the key goal.
Well, that's exactly the way that he played against
in Europe. Yeah.
Well, against Roma with great success. Ronaldo did come from a central position to score a great header.
Frank Rijkaard said afterwards, and I was saying earlier, Rijkaard's a guy who generally doesn't actually say anything in press conferences. He's quite surreal in his dullness. He said yesterday, I wasn't surprised by Man United because they always do that. And then he said something else that I thought was interesting. He said, in fact, English teams always do that. The way they play in the Premiership is always entirely different to the way they play in Europe, where they come and they set 5 or 6 men behind the ball and they try and beat you on the break.
Do you know, it's funny.
That's true, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. It goes back to this whole business of the English clubs get beaten by the Spanish get beaten by the Italians get beaten by the English. Because it's funny, I was looking at the way United lined up against Barcelona yesterday, and the way they lined up against, say, I don't know, Milan, the amount of room they were giving Barcelona, the amount of respect they were giving all Barcelona's players, there was no way that any English clubs do that to the Italians, because they know that if you go after them, they will crumble. Mm. And Italian clubs have done that time and time again. I just thought it was interesting. A couple of times when United actually took the game, put pressure on whoever was with the ball for Barcelona, Barcelona really got penned back and started to look very, very nervous indeed. It wasn't an entirely negative performance, but I think they could have come away with a lot more.
It was only through set pieces that they ever looked dangerous, right, though. To be perfectly honest, I didn't see anything that made me think Manchester United were at all lively. I thought that the only team who took the game to them was Barcelona.
And Carrick chance?
Sorry?
Carrick chance?
Well, yeah, but he's the last man you want in that position, isn't it? I mean, if it's floating over, it's a very difficult skill to bang it away from there on the near post, and he was never going to score.
Sid, what's the view in Spain now and in Catalonia regarding next week's game? I mean, a very pessimistic atmosphere, I imagine, going into this game given Barcelona's recent results, but now are they feeling a lot more buoyant about their chances?
Well, in a way, yeah. I mean, obviously this has got two sides to it, and I think Rijkaard summed it up brilliantly last night when he was asked about it, and he said, he basically said, well, look, the truth is that 0-0 at home is not a good result, but tonight we've taken a big step forward. And of course, what he means by that is the way they played recently, they went into this game fearing that they might get absolutely destroyed, fearing that they just weren't, just aren't a good team anymore. And last night has shown them that they can play and they can take the game to people.
Sid, hang about for a second. We're just going to play a nice bit of music, and then we'll hear your news from Spain that doesn't concern Barcelona and the Champions League.
I'm Alok Jha, and on the latest edition of Science Weekly.
Just being singled out in that way led to all kinds of problems. Everything from very serious bombs delivered to my home, bricks through the windows, paint stripper on the cars, I mean, all this kind of stuff, demonstrations outside our house, just on and on and on for 10 years.
Colin Blakemore, the former head of the Medical Research Council, tells us about life as the bête noire for the animal rights lobby. Also in the show...
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
We reveal research that shows McEnroe's centre court tantrums might have been justified after all. And...
Greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
We discover the links between testosterone and money-making. It's all in the latest Science Weekly at guardian.co.uk/science.
This is Guardian Football Weekly Extra.
Right, well, I enjoyed that. And I bet you did too, Paul McInnes off Music Weekly.
Because you've actually got some half-decent jingles, yes.
Do you not like yours then?
No, I don't. I reckon I could actually do better myself with a pair of upturned yoghurt pots.
Right.
But I haven't been given the opportunity.
Is that Yopturn yoghurt pot?
Yopturn? Well, indeed. You could brand it that way if you wish, but aren't we a kind of public service broadcaster.
Yeah, I think we're very much own label type thing, you know. Right.
Yeah, man.
OK, now, Sid Lowe on the line from Spain.
Hello.
Hi, Sid. Good, you're still there. Now,
I'm still here, yes.
We haven't had the chance to check. Were there other big stories that we should be talking about from La Liga? Is there maybe some big game coming up this weekend or that?
Well, there's big games, but I think more than big games this weekend, there's kind of big issues this weekend. And by that, perhaps I should explain. Athletic Bilbao go to Real Madrid, and obviously Madrid can win the league, but there's another really big issue in it, which is because we all know Madrid are going to win the league anyway. It's just a question of when. But Athletic Bilbao will have playing for the first time in 2 years a guy called Carlos Gorpegi. And, of course, Carlos Gorpegi was the guy that was done for failing a drugs test, for having nandrotestosterone in his body, which is a hormone which theoretically is only produced by nandrolone.
Is that testosterone with piri piri sauce on it, or is that...
dear, oh dear. Anyway, he's back this weekend.
Oh, OK. And that's it. Well, is there a big issue about that because they think that he shouldn't be coming back, or what?
No, he should be coming back because, assuming he was guilty, he's now paid his 2 years,
right, okay.
2 year ban, as it were, but he's still challenging it. He still insists that his body naturally produces this hormone, and that it's
when
not,
he eats spaghetti bolognese on a
when
Tuesday.
When he eats spaghetti bolognese laced with whatever it may be laced with. But no, I mean, he's challenged it, but of course the whole thing...
When has any drugs cheat ever said, fair cop? No one has ever said, fair cop, you done me.
Right.
But, you know, I did win a lot of money. Me, Sid.
Absolutely. Now, Billy Shears in Boston says, James, two podcasts concerning rain in Spain with not one mention of a plane. I consider this a dip in form. You're absolutely right, Billy Shears. How is the weather today, Sid?
Well, I'm just at the airport, Barcelona. It is glorious in Barcelona. You know what, James? Actually, this morning I was emulating my boyhood hero. I sat on a pavement cafe drinking a coffee. There was no sign of an ice cream, unfortunately, but it was quite entertaining to sit there with some fancy continental newspapers.
No. Apart from the fact there is no way you were a boy when I was doing
when
that.
When did John Barnes ever do that?
Now, Knacker eats your title in Dublin, Ireland. Question for Sid. Is it true that you pitched up in Spain with no more of a plan than this podcast seems to have, fell into a game of five-a-side in some place like Malaga, and ended up being paid almost handsomely to wander about watching football, pontificating, and occasionally swearing? Why do some people get all the luck, and then he gets nasty about me at the end of that? You don't need to hear that.
Oh, does he? Right.
Is that all true?
I turn up in Spain with no plan.
Yeah, how did you end up... How did you become Sid Lowe, Sid?
Hard work and determination, everybody.
That's almost a metaphysical question, isn't it?
Right, we've got time.
I turned up in Spain, as you probably know, to finish writing a PhD, but already writing on some Spanish football.
Oh, great. Okay, well, that's interesting. Now,
So you didn't snip. You didn't really fall arse backwards into your cushy gig.
I didn't really crawl arse backwards.
Fall arse backwards into it.
No, I didn't.
There was a career path going on. Okay, good. Sid, so was there anything else about the weekend in the Liga?
The other potentially very interesting story, as we kind of got blown a bit off course there, is the other return. We've got the return of Carlos Gorpegi after a 2 year drugs ban. Valencia, of course, have sacked Ronald Koeman.
Yes.
The new coach has come in, and he said, I may well play the Valencia three. So David Albelda, Santi Canizares, Miguel Angel Angulo could all be back in the team. And what this means, more than for Valencia, really, what this means is that David Albelda's hopes of going to European Championships have suddenly been brought alive again, which means that at last Spain may have the player that they feel they were lacking, which is basically a horrible, nasty, evil bastard in the middle of the midfield.
Oh, interesting. Very interesting. Sid, thanks for that update. And we'll be hopefully hearing from you again on a Monday.
I hope so.
Have a super weekend, Sid.
Take care, Sid.
Bye.
Have you started paying Sid for this yet?
No. No money, I believe, is changing hands.
Has Barcelona started paying Sid? More to the point.
Right. That sounded like a noble gesture on his part.
No, I think it is very much a noble gesture. Right.
As opposed to a noble jester.
Right.
That's you.
Hey, what? Well, now, the Championship continues to rank as possibly one of the most exciting relegation title races, etc., in anywhere in the continent. Isn't that right, Paul McInnes?
It most certainly is correct, James. Mm. I'm a Norwich City fan, and we are currently sitting seventh and bottom, but I still believe we can go into the automatic promotion places should we win our last two games.
All right, then.
So it's that tight. It's tighter than the proverbial
So how many games left?
Chuff.
Two for everybody?
Two left. We've got games on Saturday, and Southampton have the privilege.
Make it then,
no, we're not. Okay.
Zero.
I was exaggerating
just for the benefit
for
of our readers. I mean, it did take me a
people
while.
People know this stuff.
Analyse the championship.
The championship
table.
Is a very exciting league. People know this already. They know their stuff.
Well, the point is that it's very tight from top to bottom.
Very tight from top to bottom. That's the point I was trying to make. And right. We've got two weekends left, two yes. match days, uh-huh. We have our own Super Sunday a week on, right. which everybody plays at the same time.
Woof.
It's all. I think
you'll find it's Grand Slam Sunday.
But is that not just...
Yeah, that's a Premier, isn't it?
No, I think it's Super. Champion. I think you've got to distinguish it somehow.
Right. So, all right. Yeah. But beyond Norwich... Now, Norwich, of course...
Slightly shit Sunday?
No, you can't say things like that. And Glenn Roeder. Glenn Roeder. Yeah.
Yeah, yes or no. Well, Glenn Roeder...
He's back with... For people like me who weren't even aware of this, he's with Norwich.
He's
now.
With Norwich City.
Had a good impact when he arrived.
Yeah, he had a great impact when he
now
arrived.
Now been in charge of bringing the game into disrepute?
Yes.
Why?
Because I think he's very concerned about throwing off the image as being this kind of somebody who could be kind of working with Avram Grant on the hearse. He's very pallid and looks like a sissy. And so he's really kind of throws it about quite a bit. And he slagged off the officials after we lost a late goal away at Bristol City. When we should have won. But that's not that interesting, Jim. What is interesting is how many teams are still in contention for both promotion and relegation.
What, at the same time?
At the same... No, well, no, sadly not. Okay. As we've already proved.
Six points are in the top four.
There's one relegation place up for grabs.
Yes.
Am I right?
Yes.
And there are seven or eight teams that could still go down.
Exactamente.
I'm going to list them, shall I? Blackpool, Coventry, Norwich, Barnsley, Leicester, Southampton and the mighty Wednesday, says producer Canby, who's a Sheffield Wednesday fan.
And... Actually, this is loser takes the serious crap, actually, because if Southampton do go down, it's administration for them. Their accounts are an absolute mess, and it says in there repeatedly that they are not a going concern if revenues dry up. And I think that, I mean, having spoken to a few people close to Rupert Lowe, and who is looking to take over the club again or reassert himself and his shareholding, I think there is a confession that things are very, very bleak for Southampton. So if they don't stay up, then it's another 10-point deficit for next season.
And
if
you've
they
got
go
Coventry
down.
As well, who are close to administration earlier in the season, and a penalty. We were certainly all at Carrow Road hoping for that. They're still only 3 points off the drop too. So there's a lot riding on it for a lot of clubs.
Can I just say Colchester, poor old Colchester. I used to go there on a Friday night at Lyre Road, and this is the end of an absolutely glorious run for Colchester United Football Club. Never in their long history, well, 50 odd years, had they ever been in the second tier of English football, and they managed to survive and almost got in the playoffs in their first
they
season.
Did
there.
Brilliantly,
they did absolutely magnificently,
about 5,000 or 6,000.
And we took
the division's
so
top
players.
Scorer off of them. And
Chris Erolumo went to Charlton. I mean, there's so many players had to be sold, and they're down. And I think that everybody's gone to Colchester, a little club, not doesn't deserve to be in there in the first place, but frankly it was a magnificent effort to be there.
And of course Jamie Curran is now the Norwich boo boy as
indeed,
well so you could have well stayed there. I wonder who people think is going to whether anybody thinks that West Brom and Stoke aren't going to take those automatic places though.
I think just points on the board now, I think that's all that matters.
Well, with
really.
Two games to go, you've got West Brom who have got 77, Stoke 75, and then Hull 72.
And Bristol
so
City have gone off the boil
well,
completely, haven't they?
Yeah.
Since that 1-0 win against Norwich.
That's right. No, 2-1 win, late controversial
well,
okay,
free
kick anyway.
I can't see that there's going to be a very good...
I'm also wondering whether actually pretty much the playoff places now are now stitched up as well, and you might actually...
I think Crystal Palace will get... Oh, sorry, ignore me. They're already there.
Yeah, well, I mean, they've got a couple of tough games, and Wolves have a slightly easier run, but I think it might just finish those six going up.
If it does go that way, I'm with Stan Collymore on this, and I think that Crystal Palace could end up winning the playoffs because if you consider that Watford will probably beat Bristol City if it goes this way, I think Palace will do for Hull.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I think they do. I think Neil Warnock has got them on a very, very good run. I mean, it's 13 games. Without
the team with the momentum
normally is the team
to emerge victorious from
and
playoffs.
Actually the third place team hasn't gone through the playoffs for donkey's years. I think it's only ever happened on the one occasion. And last season, West Brom should deserve to be in the Premier League, and Derby are.
The one thing I would like to say about Hull is that...
Who play Crystal Palace this weekend.
Indeed. And we'll get a lot from that. But I think Hull have actually been quite consistent themselves and are coming from a position of low expectations. And it's not not really the case that, you know, what often happens with the third team is they slip out and they're broken. I think Hull might have a little bit more resolve about them.
Just out of interest, I now care deeply about Colchester and their fate. Anything you want to tell me about Norwich that will in any way inspire me to follow this?
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing, right? Darren Huckabee.
Yes.
We love Darren Huckabee. You know Darren Huckabee.
Right.
He was the
there
guy
was a film they made about that, wasn't
he? He wasn't quite good enough for the Premiership, but he was great in the Championship and we love him to bits. And it's quite likely to be his last game for Norwich after 5-6 years on Saturday. And it will be very sentimental. We'll be losing Dion Dublin as well, who's been a talisman for us the last couple of seasons. And we need to win this match against QPR in order to stave off relegation. And I've got a horrible fear that there will be an awful lot of sentiment and an awful lot of emotion wandering around, and we won't get those points. And those billionaire bastards, can you use that word? Yeah, they'll do for us.
Well, you went down after on the final day of the season from the Premiership, didn't you? After a 7-0 defeat.
6-0. I had the pleasure to be there.
Fulham, of all places.
At Fulham, who had nothing to play for. They came out, absolutely tore us apart, brought Andy Cole on for the last half an hour. He scored a couple. And I was phoned into the sports desk. They wanted a fan's eye view of the match. And they couldn't use 3/4 of what I said because it was all expletives.
Right.
Did
you use the word bastard? Lots changed since then, eh?
Yeah, exactly.
On the subject of Huckabee, I remember reading Gordon Strachan's autobiography, and it was like a few chapters devoted to his youth, a couple of chapters devoted to the Aberdeen years, a couple of chapters devoted to the Manchester United years, the Coventry years, and then a chapter devoted to Darren Huckabee.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What did he have to say about him?
Well, when he had Huckabee at Coventry, Huckabee was a bit of a wayward lad.
Oh.
So Strachan made him move into his house. So it was like Mr. and Mrs. Strachan, their kids, and Darren Huckabee living in the spare room. And they kept him on a very, very tight rein.
That's the way to tame him.
That's fantastic. Yeah. What a story. I know Gordon. I think he's great. I really do. Marvellous.
There's another book. Some American guy wrote it. It's A Year in the Life of Coventry, Coventry City under Strachan, a fly in the wall kind of book. And you would think that Huckabee used to hang around with Noel Whelan and Paul Telfer when they were at Coventry. And every, you know, they'd be at an away match in a hotel the night before the game. So they used to just sit in the lobby of whatever hotel they were in drinking tea, which I always thought was quite civilised and not the kind of behaviour that you'd expect from Messrs. Whelan and Huckabee.
Were they just slipping Nandro testosterone into us?
I don't know.
Yeah. Now, well, there you go. That was the wide world of the Championship, and many thanks for that. The UEFA Cup, eh? It's going to be played this evening.
Yes.
Rangers taking on Fiorentina, and then you've got...
it's in Ibrox, which gives Rangers the advantage, but
Rangers
needed, are missing Alan McGregor, Barry Ferguson, Kevin Thompson, Lee McCullough, Chris Burke and Steve Naismith from their
first choice team.
Yep. So they're decimated. The fixture pile-up is catching up with them, and they'll do very, very well to
Well, they're
get
looking for the quadruple. That's the problem. They won the CIS Cup. They're in the Scottish Cup final, I think, are they not?
The SFA have now, or the Scottish Premier League, they've rejigged their season. They've sent out two end-of-season schedules, depending on whether Rangers get to the UEFA Cup final or not.
Right.
All the other Scottish teams or teams in the SPL have kicked up about this because they're upset that the season might end 4 days later than was originally scheduled to end.
In a European Championship year, which is always going to be problematic.
Yeah. Bad news for them is that the Fiorentina team, who struggled rather to get past Fiorentina early on in the Cup, now have Mutu back and banging. He got them past PSV with two goals in the away leg and one at home. And he's got 6 overall in the competition. He is, though, 1 yellow card from suspension, so that could be a ray of light for Scottish fans. But Fiorentina very much on form and making this their priority, apparently, above their challenge for, well, they're currently in fourth place in Serie A. They regard winning the UEFA Cup, if they can do it, as being of even more importance than getting into the Champions League.
Does fourth place get you into the Champions League in Italy? Or
it does. And the thing about Fiorentina...
Into Toto Cup?
No, this gets you into the Champions
League. It's still a major league, is it?
Very much so, Paul, yeah. No, Part 3 awaits us with a quick look at some posts on that and a merry scamper through the weekend's fixtures. How about that? Right, part 3. Let's start off with a quick look at the posts. Barry.
Yes.
Easy there. Dien Wong suggesting that Thaksin's win or get out ultimatum to Sven-Göran Eriksson was more for domestic Thai consumption as anything else, burnishing Shinawat's credentials as a no-nonsense manager. Interesting that. He also asked the question again whether the recordings of our Euro 2008 coverage, how that's going to work. Daily and after the final whistle each evening, I think, is the idea there. Right on Brother in Hull, as a Dutch speaker, Sorry, that should be as a Dutch speaker, I can comment that Harry's pronunciation of Eredivisie, he says I'm doing it wrong, was pretty good. Shame on you, James, for erroneously correcting him. Can I just ask posters, please, don't use the words shame on you. There's been a whole rash of shame on you, Barry, and shame on you, James, really.
Can we also have a ban on I expect better from the Guardian? God, right. A, it's boring, it's lame, and B, I don't really know why they expect better from the Guardian.
At least you don't get, do they pay you to write this?
Well, right. We do, yes. Oh, you do. Well, not from the podcast, because we're saying it.
Right.
I might as well,
Sean Ingle,
I might as well wander into the belly.
No.
No, just Barry, listen.
All right, then. All right.
Since pointing out that Newcastle haven't beaten anyone in the top 10 of the Premier League, yes, under Keegan, and venturing the opinion that I thought Roy Keane was a better manager, I've received over 50 abusive emails and had an article on a Newcastle fanzine website devoted to what an idiot and a wanker, inverted commas, I am.
Like,
but, you know, it was an opinion.
Right.
Everyone's entitled to disagree with me.
Yes, they are.
And but I stand over my opinion.
Right.
And until Roy Keane resigns in a dressing room toilet while blubbing about the fact that he doesn't know what he's doing, I presume it's fair to say he is not fit to touch the hem of Kevin Keegan's
role. I think that was one of the most courageous acts in the history of the England football team, actually. The fact that he did it in the toilet was unfortunate. However, God help us, wouldn't we all have loved if Steve McClaren had admitted very early on, I am absolute pony, this job is beyond me, but and I must go.
I agree with you, Matt. I don't have a problem with Kevin Keegan. He seems like a really, really nice bloke. Mm. But all I did was venture the opinion that I think Roy Keane is a better manager than him. That's all it was.
Steve McClaren, interestingly, has just been hired by the BBC for their Euro 2000. Well, the unbelievable thing is, do you know how much he's being paid for it?
Go on.
$5,000.
Which is
nothing
much, is it?
Yeah, no, he could double that at the Guardian.
So is he doing?
I wouldn't
get
out of bed for that kind of money.
Exactly.
It's BBC Radio, though, isn't it?
Hey, I think
not
it
TV.
Is Five Live still.
It's Five Live. However, come on. I mean, that man needs to go nowhere near the England football team. I don't blame him. Blame him for being rubbish. We all knew he was going to be rubbish. I blame the FA for appointing him in the first place. Mm. But frankly, come on.
He doesn't need the money.
Don't be giving him work.
And his press conferences were the worst in history, so it doesn't exactly fill you with...
But there's a certain car crash element. I mean, bringing him back in, there's going to be a lot of curiosity to hear him say his vapid nothings.
Will he be speaking from under the shelter of a brolly? Because this is the enduring image.
If you've had a major disaster in any walk of life,
okay,
and you don't want to be publicly associated with that subject matter again. Indeed. So in his words,
I think it's the brass,
he needs to stay as far away as possible from England. Oh. And right this summer, there's going to be nowhere that's further away from England, from the English national team, than Euro 2000.
But isn't there a law that prevents criminals from profiting from their crimes, which is basically what he's doing here?
Fundament 666, on the continuing issue of who he is, says, do I work in GUTAS? No, just ask Sean Ingle, he knows. Sean's not around today, I've got to ask him about
it. I do know that for a fact that Fundament 666 is not a Guardian employee.
But you know who he is then?
I do, yes.
Really?
I don't know him personally, but I've had email correspondence from him.
Oh, okay, there you go. Right, okay.
As far as I know, he doesn't even live in the UK.
My word, eh? Is he in a rival satellite or something?
I think he's an American gentleman. How does a Briton living in the United States of America.
How does he prove who he is?
I don't know, it's like Spider-Man or Superman. You know. You don't really want to know who he is.
Right.
It would be a terrible shame if he... Maybe his wife or his girlfriend knows who he is, but she's not.
So you mean he works not for The Guardian, but The Daily Planet?
Yes.
The Daily Pupil.
Now, VC Findke, is that how you say that? I can't believe the Dutch league was discussed, but then passed by without mention of the playoffs at the top of the table for the second Champions League spot between Ajax, NAC Breda, FC Twente, and Heerenveen, which is definitely my favourite name for a football team ever.
See, you could have terminated that email just by saying, I can't believe the Dutch league was mentioned.
No.
Full stop.
It's a fair point. And VC Findke, or however I should be pronouncing that, I have to say, apologise humbly for the fact that we dropped the ball on that one. We missed the... You know, we lost the plot, etc. Oot Vantage 06 wants to know about the Webster Clause, which allows young players to leave on the cheap. Please can the pod discuss this in more details in the next episode. Has anyone used it so far except for Webster himself?
Matt Scott. Who knows about these things?
Well, Webster played for Heart of Midlothian. I believe he was a fullback, and he was only...
Can you sing this as like a country and western? Webster played
for Heart of Midlothian. I believe he was a fullback.
I am dressed like one.
That would be nicer, wouldn't it? Because it's going to be a bit dry otherwise, isn't
it? It's going to be dreadfully dry. Yeah, you play for Hearts.
The Ballad of... Yeah,
yeah, I can't do that. Yeah.
All right, okay.
If somebody bought James a packet of Just For Men, would it be Hair and Vein? I don't know. Just putting it out there.
All right, then. Matt.
Stunned into silence by that non sequitur. But Webster was a fullback at Hart Midlothian. He took advantage of a long-standing FIFA clause that people have been a bit wary of using. I think that anybody in the football world, the likes of Frank Lampard, who've threatened, used that stick as a sword of Damocles over Chelsea in contract negotiations in the past. William Gallas might have used it when trying to get out of Chelsea against Arsenal and over to Arsenal. People never actually went with it because they were worried about becoming a pariah in international football. Could you be the first person to
So there's a kind of gentleman's agreement not to make use of this.
There sort of was. I mean, I don't know if it was just that nobody wanted to take the plunge, basically. Mm. But then Webster, at heart, decided that, frankly, there were better opportunities elsewhere, and he was perfectly within his entitlement to use it. Hearts challenged that opportunity. It went to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. Ridiculously, as with all such things, FIFA said, "Oh no, we can't actually arbitrate on this because FIFA will never, ever take responsibility for their own statutes." It went to an expensive court process, and Webster obviously won because it was the rules.
How long ago was this?
It was last year.
All right, Barry and Paul have begun exchanging notes, so I think we better move on. What does it say?
I love you, Barry. I love you too, Paul.
No, I wanted you to meet you afterwards. I was asking Paul to ask Matt if he wanted to meet after school.
This is exactly how Sid and Paul fell out. Right. So I think that they ought to.
It was the notes. It was the translation
actually,
of the
notes. Story yes. in today's pod that
there was never.
I'm
up.
Only interested in hearing. That I'm interested in hearing, and we didn't get the.
Never mind. Can I not tempt you with a little whiff of Chelsea Manchester United?
You can indeed.
All right then, let's talk Turkey because it is the big one. Chelsea are 2 points behind Man United. No, three points.
3 points.
That's the whole point.
An enormous goal difference.
And an enormous. So they effectively need 4 points.
They need to win 31.
So they need to win this one, and then they need Man United to slip up in what their two remaining games after that,
which are against West Ham and who are Manchester United's end of season bogey team.
Well, indeed,
Bolton, isn't it? Mm. It's Wigan.
Interesting. Now, any chance on Chelsea? Well, it all has to start with Chelsea beating Man United this weekend. Are they going to do it?
Man United won't beat Chelsea this weekend.
Will they lose to Chelsea this weekend, Matt?
Don't think they will. No. But if they do, it doesn't really matter. I mean, it depends. Right. If he wants to rest everybody, I can't see Vidic playing. If he wants to rest everybody with a view to beating Barcelona 2 days later, then that's a strong.
Do you think it's definite that Grant will go for it?
No, he didn't do it against Liverpool, did he? Do you remember? I mean, he's been craven in his selections.
I wonder if he might look at this and think, OK, well, you know, we've got a better chance of going through to the Champions League final. That's what Roman wants. Let's rest the key players now.
Yeah, well, he could learn from the past of Claudio Ranieri, who...
Well, the last meeting at Old Trafford was especially craven. It is interesting just to remember once again that since that game, the two teams have picked up exactly the same number of points.
That's very interesting.
Barry?
I think Chelsea will beat Manchester United.
There you go.
Manchester United rested quite a few players in last night's game. They were playing, but they didn't do much. So. Mm. But if they play that badly again at the weekend, they will get beaten.
I think the thing about Chelsea, though, as people were pointing out on the blog post Tuesday night, is that Chelsea don't really have much incision at the minute. You know, they took off Joe Cole's been the player in form. They took him off. Malouda's been out of form, trying to find his way back. Kalou, I'm not
Joe
that
Cole
convinced about. And Drogba in particular doesn't look the player of last season.
Well, Pleaty points out appositely that they're playing too many long balls to their talismanic striker, and since the African Nations Cup, he's not had. I think actually it's quite strange the effect that the African Nations Cup had on players based in England. I mean, Touré's been appalling. Ebuwe's been dreadful.
Drogba came back and he was out of form, and then he sort of hit a bit of form, and now he's gone out again. I don't know if it's because he's got a chippy attitude and he wants to leave, or just he's
that's
tired.
He certainly does want to leave.
Now, Birmingham City, Liverpool, Birmingham City, they're in trouble, aren't they? How many points are they? They're 1 point off safety in the bottom three, is that right? They're in the bottom three, aren't they? 1 point behind Bolton, and we were reckoning that Reading might be in some trouble as well. Birmingham have a rotten record against teams at the top. Liverpool have a good record against teams at the bottom.
The reason why why Reading were in trouble was because of their appalling goal difference, but Villa have put Birmingham down 5-1, and that means that they too are in a fairly similar position, but without the points. I think that it would be great if Alex McLeish is no longer a Premiership manager.
Why have you got an issue with him?
Because
does this go back to your personal friendship with
Gordon Strachan?
We've cut that out. We've already cut that out.
You asked for it to be cut out.
That appalling name drop has to be cut out. So
this is live. Tell us why you don't like Alex McLeish. Tell us why you don't like him.
Because though I don't blame Martin Taylor for what happened to Eduardo, I think that he was the agent of his manager, who said, you know, go out there and stick one.
But
on,
do you not think everybody does that? I mean, Barcelona last night spent the first 15 minutes trying to knock Ronaldo around the Camp Nou.
But they have nothing else, do they, Birmingham City?
All right, okay, fair
Martin Taylor played for Norwich this season. He's just a little bit short of Premiership speed. That's the thing. He was just late into that.
Yeah, but having been told, I have absolutely no doubt to go out there and do something, which is something that that Steve Bruce
put in
concurs with, and he's a good friend of McLeish. So
well, I thought you were going to say he's a good friend of yours, like Gordon Strachan.
I didn't say that anyway. I said now, I know him. He doesn't know me, but I know him. I didn't know the story about... I can't say that I know Gordon Strachan when I didn't know the story about Darren Huckabee. So
I think you're jealous because Gordon Strachan's really never invited you to stay in his house with him and Mrs. Strachan.
I would have liked that because I think he's great company. Genuinely, I think he's a really,
I wouldn't
really
know.
Nice bloke.
He's not one of my celebrity chums.
Can you ever know anybody, though?
Thanks, Paul. West Ham are taking on Newcastle United. I can't believe I said those words. However,
it's another chance for Newcastle to try and beat someone in the top 10.
I think they have a decent chance because West Ham are looking about as
interested in what's going on.
I think it's going to be a very, very interesting summer for West Ham United. That's a club with a distended squad, and that is the Alan Kirbishley effect. He's always used to having 40 first team players, but that's going to have to be trimmed to about 24. They've got a lot of. I think Bjørgólfur Gudmundsson, can I say that again? Not a personal friend, but I like the way I said that. Bjørgólfur Gudmundsson is a billionaire banker, and the fact that Landsbanki is the major bank in Iceland, it has not escaped the credit crunch, which means that he too has taken a hit.
Right.
I don't think they've got a major financial crisis brewing, not along the lines of what they had under Terry Brown, but I do think that they are going to, they're going to have to trim down the squad, and whether or not Alan Kirbishley is able to manage a thin squad, and he is a man who's got excuses coming out of his ears about injuries all the time. I don't think that he's going to manage to do that.
Yeah, their chief exec has already gone on record to say they're going to have to trim the squad, but they're in a good position because they've got leaders like Lucas Neal in the squad.
Okay, now the other big game this weekend is
I tell you a story about Egan Bergerson, incidentally, and West Ham?
No.
Robert Green was
ex-Norwich,
initially signed to be Dean Ashton's mate.
Right.
Because Dean Ashton was a bit homesick and not enjoying his time at West Ham,
right.
So they brought Robert Green in.
At Norwich.
He was signed on Championship wages, effectively about $10,000 a week.
Uh-huh.
He was invited into the chairman's office. We'd not made any overtures for leaving the club. Nobody had come in for him. Invited into the chairman's office and given a significant, substantial pay rise of possibly fourfold. And obviously was laughing, but that did characterise the Magnussen regime.
Why?
Unfortunately, just because he was. Spunking the chairman's money or the owner's money.
No, but why did they give him the pay rise?
Because he was spunking the owner's money. He
thought that the squad
it keeps them happy. It was a Peter Ridsdale moment.
My word.
Just like the apocryphal Peter Ridsdale Seth Johnson story, which I'm not going to tell.
Well, go on, Barry. It's a great story. For listeners out there...
Peter Ridsdale denies it, but apparently when Seth Johnson was signing for Leeds, he went in with his agent and the agent said, right, we'll ask for $25,000 a week, but we'll settle for 15. And they went into the chairman's office. Peter Ridsdale says, right, you can have $40,000 a week or nothing. And they went, okay. End of negotiations.
Now, finally for today then, Everton Aston Villa. Because, Villa, eh? They're on. They're like a rocket. They're heading for that fifth place straight entry into UEFA Cup spot and scoring 15 goals in their last three games. Against rubbish teams, clearly. But do Everton qualify for that category given their recent
I think they do at the moment because since Tim Cahill or Cahill, as he's called here, got injured, they've just gone into free fall. And they've had really rough luck with injuries, so I don't think they can be, you know, there's extenuating circumstances for their current crapness. But you'd have to go with Villa in that game. You know,
Yakubu's done his traditional end-of-season dry-up thing as well, hasn't he?
I think Villa would beat Everton, just on form.
And, I think a draw.
It doesn't really matter.
No, I think a draw.
It does to fans of those two clubs, Barry.
Oh, yeah.
But that's all for today's Football Weekly Extra, unless there's something else that anybody wanted to throw in.
The fixtures there in front of you. Who's Sunderland playing?
Oh,
Wrexham's relegation I wanted to talk about.
All right, and we ran out of time.
But they went out of football league.
I wanted to talk about Rio Ferdinand looking old, but I forgot to mention that.
Well, yes.
I noticed that in the paper this morning. Mm. He looked really old.
He's turning into Arsene Wenger, isn't he?
Just in 6 months.
Listen, lock up when you leave, guys. No,
it's fine. Yeah. We've been put in our place.
And by the way, Sunderland are taking on Middlesbrough. Very good. Listen, Barry, thanks for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
Matt Scott, sparkling performance as ever.
Very pleased to be here.
And what about Paul McInnes?
What about
too good?
I'll be asked back.
Too good.
Oh, really?
Really?
Too good for this pod.
Too good for this pod.
Which is why you won't be asked back.
How's everything going over with the sistership music weekly?
All 250 listeners appear to be very happy. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. And you get top bands on all the time, do you?
Top bands every week on Music Weekly.
Who have you got on this
guest chat? Well, we've got Wiley, Wearing My Rolex. Yeah. It's the tune that's blown up the clubs and Radio 1. We've got him.
Right.
We've got Kitty Empire from The Observer reviewing all the latest tunes. And we've got some band I've never heard of called Hatcham Social. But they're bound to be big in 6 months, so tune in.
Who's the most exciting band you've ever actually had in that you were like... Oof.
I tell you what, meeting Mick Jones from The Clash.
Oh.
I love him.
Right.
He's just so super smart and drunk.
You ask, we could get Gordon Strachan probably in, if you want, one time.
With Paul Ince.
With Paul Ince, yeah.
Well, there's a band from Limerick, I don't know if they're still a going concern, called The Hitchers, fronted by Niall Quinn, who, not the footballer, but the Niall Quinn, who was originally in the Cranberries. And they released a single called Gordon Strachan, so you could sort of possibly tie it to that.
How get Matt in.
All right, we'll that kind of that cosmic one. Symmetry note is probably where it's best to leave things today. Many, many thanks, listeners. And we'll speak to you on Monday. Cheery bye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.